The NFL draft is this week, and we got one of my favorite folks talking about the NFL to join me here on the number one college football show, Dave Hillman. I'm so excited about this. Let's go. It's the number one college football show. What's up, kinfolk? Welcome to the number one college football show. I am your host, RJ Young. Thank you for watching on the Fox Sports app, YouTube, or listening wherever you get your podcast. Today, we got the man for the NFL on Fox Pod. I listen to it. You should listen to it. If you don't listen to it, I'm going to ask you why. That is one Dave Hillman, who hails from Louisiana. But Dave, let me get started with this, dog. I first learned about you because I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan. We don't have to get into that, but I do want to ask this. What was your first moment when you were covering Dallas in the DFW? We're like, oh, they really, really care about this team in a way that might be toxic.
Oh, man. God, there's so many memories to go back on. So, I mean, if you're not familiar, I covered the Cowboys for 10 years before I got to Fox. I would say it's not one specific memory, RJ, but I remember, and look, I'm from Louisiana. I grew up a Saints fan, and I tell people all the time, like when I was younger and I was coming up, I was like, America's team, whatever. Like, you know, the classic like disdain for the Cowboys and what they're all about. And then I started covering them and I started going to road games. And it doesn't matter if the game is in New Orleans or Seattle or DC.
We in there.
It's crazy. There's a few fan bases that can claim it, but like, it doesn't matter what city in the country. It doesn't even really matter the country. I mean, I've seen the Cowboys play in the UK in front of 50,000 Cowboy fans. It's just, until you experience it, you don't really understand. And I'm here to tell you, you don't have to like it. But the America's team thing is very, very real. It's absurd how big the fan base is, how wide it stretches. And so that was my first memory. When I started covering the team, I was like, oh, crap, there really are this many of these people. Wow. Okay. Good to know.
And we are everywhere all the time and not always in a great way because we're going in the NFL draft and all of us are freaking out because we didn't make no moves. But this is a time when other teams start to make some moves, particularly in a loaded offensive draft, right? Talking about maybe 20, 21 picks could be on the offensive side. But I want to start with talking about being from Louisiana, right? Growing up a New Orleans Saints fan, huge LSU Tiger guy. Yeah. I'm going to start with a provocation here, Dave. Maybe Jaden Daniels isn't that good.
You had to go all the way there? You had to go all the way to maybe he's not good?
Again, a provocation means please tell me that he is.
Well, the irony, RJ, I am an LSU fanatic. Anybody who knows me knows that. That's where I went to school. It's where my family and most of my friends are. But I'm also a journalist and B, a level-headed type of fan. So like, I'll be the first person. I'll hop on here and tell you, if I had the Commanders pick at number two overall in the draft on Thursday night, I would draft Drake May. I would. I think his arm talent is insane. The athleticism that goes along with it, some of the off-platform stuff that he does, the throws that he was able to make despite not having an offensive line or much of a supporting cast. I love Drake May. I would take him number two overall. But to get on here and say Jaden Daniels isn't any good whatsoever.
Not that good.
It's a bridge too far for me. And I think the reason why is I just think there is enough natural talent there to help Jaden Daniels overcome whatever his deficiencies might be. Like, yeah, he's not going to be able to run as much in the NFL as he did in college, but that is still a valuable part of his game. When you talk like like I said, you're not going to see Jaden doing the stuff he did in college, you know, pulling the ball down and running for 65 yards against Florida. You're not going to see that in the NFL, but you talk about a guy with the athleticism and the wherewithal, and I think the pocket presence to turn a broken protection into a 4 to 6 yard game. absolutely possible, absolutely valuable in the NFL. He's got a good, not amazing arm, but a more than good enough arm and the ability to make things happen out of schedule. I think Jaden Daniels, which this applies to so many more quarterbacks than we give it credit for, he needs to go somewhere where he can lean on other elements of his offense. But how many people doesn't that apply to? You know what I mean? Like, there just aren't very many guys that are going to be successful regardless of their supporting cast. So if you take Jaden and put him somewhere where he's going to have time to throw and he's going to have receivers that create enough separation to give him confidence to throw on time, I think he's going to be a pretty good player. I do think Drake May and Caleb Williams have the higher NFL ceiling. I'll go with you that far.
Okay, so let me back into this Jaden Daniels take, right? I've been watching Jaden Daniels play for 5 years, 6 years, going back to watching him sit out the opening final because he was hurt and he couldn't go. And I saw him at Arizona State. Good quarterback, took care of the football. He transfers to LSU. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe we'll see here. And then 2023, I saw a different human being, so much so that he's an alien, because the jump that that dude took from, say, 2019 to 2023 is ridiculous. I got so much data to show he was only this guy for this year. A couple of things just make me uneasy, right? I think there's a better comparison to Bryce Young as far as him getting ragdolled. I don't like the way that he gets hit. Like, Lamar Jackson don't get hit like that. And he takes off running with the ball. Jaden has me afraid for his life. And then, I mean, you know better than anybody else. All y'all do is produce these Pro Football Hall of Fame wide receivers that go eat everybody up. So I'm like, I was so mad. I was so mad in 29. We don't have to talk about it. We ain't got to talk about it. But I am going to say, I think that Jaden Daniels is good. I don't know that I'm going to trade up to go get him, right? I mean, Caleb and Drake, we can have a different conversation with, but I'm really thinking about Jaden Daniels versus Michael Penix Jr., right? Do you want an older quarterback who's got the injury history, but is lightning with the ball and get it out? I'm also thinking about a guy like Bo Nix, who I still can't wrap my head around, kind of like in that Jaden Daniels space for me. But the guy that you mentioned that you kind of mentioned, and we're talking about, is he going to get some help from those guys around him? J.J. McCarthy did a lot of that at Michigan. So I'm wondering, if you're in an apples to oranges conversation here, Jaden Daniels can make these plays when there is no play to make, and yet he somehow does that. Or a guy that can very much just run your offense, and J.J. McCarthy, I kind of think that he's Brock Purdy with wheels. Maybe I'm being harsh. Am I being harsh in any of those assessments?
I don't think you're being harsh. And this quarterback class is, it's especially terrifying because, like, even Caleb Williams, who we all recognize is going to go first and has been that dude for several years, I think you can come up with valid criticisms for the way that he played last year. I know USC's offense was a mess as well, but that's the problem of your own success. When you win a Heisman Trophy the year before your final season in college, you get held to that standard. I think there were enough warts in his junior tape that, again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't take Caleb number one overall, but even he comes with things that make you second guess yourself. And now apply that to the rest of this class. I mean, I can come up with something terrifying about all of these guys. Drake May, again, you didn't see the success on the field. I think some of the decision-making on Drake May's part can be pretty out there over the course of, you know, if you watch enough games. Jaden, yeah, there is. And that's another part of it with Jaden and Michael Penix as well. Some of these guys have been playing college football forever.
Not a great thing. It's not my favorite thing.
RJ.
Not my favorite
RJ. Thing. Like, you realize Jaden Daniels threw the ball to Brandon Ayuk in college. Jaden Daniels and Ayuk played at Arizona State together. Ayuk is angling for his second NFL contract.
You're speaking my language. You really are.
Yeah. And I mean, Bo Nix, look, I'm an SEC fan. I remember Bo Nix being like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde throughout his Auburn career, where it's like, all right, is this guy going to be the amazing athlete who can make something happen out of nothing? Or is he going to be the guy that loses DBs in coverage every other time he drops back? Or is he going to be the Heisman candidate from Oregon? So some of these guys have such a large body of work that it almost like paralyzes you because you're like, which guy is the real guy? I think that's a very real thing. And age is an element, you know, Jaden and Penix in particular, you're like, okay, you're not young by prospect standards. Like how much room for growth is there? How much more potential is there to unlock from what we've already seen across a 4 or 5 year college career? So I think this is it's a unique draft class where you can argue for or against all of these guys in half a dozen different ways. I didn't even get to the most polarizing one of all. I don't know what to do with JJ McCarthy. I'll be honest with you. JJ McCarthy scares the bejesus out of me because again, as a diehard college football fan, I watched most, if not all of Michigan's games because they were a national title contender. And you get to the end of the season and you're like, wait, they're talking about this guy as a first round pick? Based on what? What am I missing? And then you go back and there were some really impressive moments against Alabama. There were some really impressive moments against Michigan. But like, is that enough to stake your reputation on?
But that's just it with JJ, right? It is the tools are there. Like he will flash it. The speed he has, the arm strength he has. You see, like I said, Brock Purdy. I said Brock Purdy because if Brock Purdy could run and Brock Purdy could throw a football faster than Joe Milton can throw a football, he would be JJ McCarthy. Now, the offense they ran is the offense they ran, right? And I think that is what we're really arguing about is, okay, what offense are you going to put him in? Like, the Niners are taken, right? Maybe what Sean Payton is doing in Denver, but apparently he just made a trade for Zach Wilson. So I'm not really sure where he fits in as far as what franchises are doing right now. But to your point, I was watching him for years going, okay, I see a 5-star here. But they're not letting that guy be the guy that I think he could be. Now, is that good or bad, right? Because Drake May got the keys from Phil Longo. We saw some good. We saw some bad, right? I see a lot of what I would like in a modern quarterback in him with less drama than Caleb Williams. And I'm an Oklahoma fan saying this, right? He pulled us out a couple of times. Then he lost his job to Spencer Rattler. Then he transferred to USC. He wins a Heisman Trophy. Also, back to that, right? He's kind of what we've come to expect from a Lincoln Riley quarterback, right? And I kind of I want to lead that into our college football conversation just a little bit, but I'm curious, as a guy who's watching a lot of college football and watching a lot of NFL, why is it that Lincoln Riley's quarterbacks tend to be the guys that people want to go get with the first pick in the draft?
It's a hell of a recruiting tool, isn't it?
Man,
come spend 3 years with me and I'll get you drafted number one overall. I mean,
and a Heisman.
And probably a Heisman Trophy. You're right. We can't discount that either. I mean, I think for starters, and I'm curious because the USC offense, and maybe we're just spoiled, but like the USC offense last year was so compared to what we've gotten used to from like when Lincoln was really in his bag at Oklahoma and even the year before that at USC when Caleb won the Heisman Trophy. But I think my answer to that would just be, Lincoln has been at the cutting edge of offensive play calling since he took over at Oklahoma. I think the Oklahoma offense is going to give you unique looks, fun looks. They're going to put up a lot of yards. They're going to put up a lot of points. Now, does that translate to the NFL? No, not always anyway. But what it does do is attract the best guys. Guys who are going to say, hey, I want to be in that system that's going to showcase me and make me look as good as possible for anybody watching on the NFL side of things. And so I think it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy where – is it the offense? I don't know, but the offense attracts the top caliber guys. I mean, think of the caliber of prospects that have come through this offense. I know, you know, Baker was this great rags to riches story at the beginning of his career, but by the time he was ready to start at Oklahoma, this was a guy who had already won in the Big 12, who already had some degree of success, and you could count on that. And then, oh, by the way, who does Lincoln Riley attract? He gets Kyler, who's the be-all, end-all prospect, the most amazing prospect that I can ever remember. Spencer Rattler was a top-of-the-line guy. You bring in Caleb. So it's funny because I don't think this is an offense that particularly translates 1-to-1 to the NFL, but it attracts talents that NFL evaluators are going to watch. That's my opinion anyway.
I think it's a good one. I also notice he gives that quarterback every option available. He says, you see it, go make a play, right? I'm going to send you something that I think is going to work, but here's the concept, right? Go make that concept work for you. And he really will ride behind his guy. Go ahead.
No, which to bring it back a topic, I do think that's what's interesting about JJ McCarthy is as much freelancing and as much as Lincoln Riley might put on his quarterback, I wonder if NFL coaches see JJ McCarthy, and to bring it back to your Brock Purdy point, they say, hey, here's a guy who's going to find the read and make the throw, just like Brock Purdy, like find the end breaker, find the guy that the offense has schemed open for you. And if it's not there, you're athletic enough to get the hell out of there, which do I know what's going to happen on Thursday? Absolutely not. But I understand the smoke about Minnesota and JJ McCarthy because Kevin O'Connell, the head coach in Minneapolis, he comes from that tree. He's got some experience with Sean McVay. He's worked with Kyle Shanahan as well. And so I think there are plenty of coaches that say, if I can just find a guy who's going to make the obvious read and has the athleticism to make himself right when it's not there, we can win some football games. So even though JJ didn't have to do it a ton in college, I can see the appeal if you trust your offense that much.
He also gives you leader guy vibes, right? He gives you, I'm going to be on the program type vibes. And I head coaches love that stuff. But a point that I think is interesting here, you're talking about a guy that's going to make the read that you need to make. Bill Walsh designed the West Coast offense to be quarterback proof, right? He designed it so that Steve Young and Joe Montana didn't have to be Steve Young or Joe Montana. Just run my offense. It's going to work. It turns out both of those guys had some traits that enhanced the offense. What I find fascinating about the Lincoln Riley part of that is that's the guy that he studied the most. And to see how his offense has come into fruition, right? This kind of power raid, this pro raid, has been interesting for me because it seems to be an antithetical approach to the quarterback is not necessarily the end all be all. But if I can give the quarterback the belief that he can go out there and make it happen within this system and freelance the imaginary box, if you will, then they tend to go out there and do something. It's interesting to also talk about the guys that didn't work out, like Spencer Rattler, like Tanner Mordecai, who ended up going to SMU and then Wisconsin, had a pretty good career, but did not succeed in being QB1. We'll see what happens with Malachi Nelson, who transferred to Boise State. And it's going to be an interesting test case with Miller Moss, because I thought for sure somebody was going to come in and say, no, I'll take that offense, Lincoln. I'll take that right off your hands. And he apparently has picked Miller Moss. So we get to see if it's the offense and the head coach, or the guy that threw six TDs in the Holiday Bowl, which is nothing too shabby, against a Louisville team that could be pretty good. I kind of want to get to Miller Moss by asking this. Didn't know what I had, Miller Moss, till he played, right? Caleb is sitting out. We got the transfer. I had asked the same question that I asked you about Jaden Daniels, about Arch Manning. What if he's not that good? And then on Saturday, sir, I apologize. I was wrong. 19 of 25, 355, and looked so good throwing the ball. Did you know this was already down there, Isidore Newman? Did you know this?
Oh, I mean, I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana. I've known who Arch Manning was for way too long, honestly.
Fair.
Arch Manning did not enjoy an anonymous childhood. So yeah, I mean, I've known he's been on the radar forever. And as an LSU fan, you can count on people named Manning to not really entertain the Tigers. So that's another thing where you're like, oh man, this kid looks really good, and he is not going to go to LSU.
Hold on. I got it. One word. Why?
I mean, the cliche obvious answer is because his grandpa went to Ole Miss. I mean, come on, we can't be. And his uncle, for that matter. I mean, the two.
But y'all want it so bad. Y'all want it so bad.
No, it's interesting. I mean, look, honestly, what's funny, and I'm getting off the rails here a little bit, but for so many years, LSU was a program where quarterback careers went to die. Like, I wouldn't blame a 4 or 5 star quarterback for missing out on for not wanting to go to LSU. Why would you? you want to go somewhere where you're going to hand off 30 times a game and throw for 1400 yards in a season? Like, that doesn't sound fun to me. But then Joe showed up and everything's a little bit different. We got two Heisman Trophy winners. We got a number one prospect in next year's class. So maybe the tide's changing a little bit, but I don't trust Arch Manning if he didn't trust our track record back when he was a recruit. But having said that, RJ, I'm curious, and I'm not trying to be a hater. I'm really not. But you brought up the Holiday Bowl, and now you're bringing up the spring game. Which of those do you trust less? Because, like, the greatest mirages in college football, in my opinion, are the guy that balled in the bowl game and the guy that balled in the spring game. That's not to say nobody that does that ever goes on to true success. But if I had a nickel for every time I got excited about a guy who balled out in a bowl game or a spring game, I'd have a lot of money lying around. That's all I'm trying to say.
Well, hey, look, the Nussbus balled out.
That's a great example. Okay. Garrett Nussmeier balled out in our bowl game, and do I think it means anything for the coming season? Absolutely not.
No, I'm all in on the Nussbus. Like, I love me some Nussmeier. That dude, he is y'all. Like, I look at him and he saw what Joe did and he said, "No, I can do that. I'll do that. That's gonna be fun." Miles Brennan didn't quite get it. Garrett gets it. He understands.
He's got the swag and the confidence. He's got all that stuff, but I got to see you do it in a real game, especially at the state of the sport right now with what we're trotting out there in the non-CFP bowl games. Come on. I'm not booking tickets to the SEC championship based on what I saw in a Cheez-It bowl. No, thank you.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't with that defense either, but you know, the point is taken, right? I understand what it's like to have a crappy defense and expect the offense to have to carry you. Like, I
that,
get it.
That you do as an Oklahoma fan.
That is the reason we didn't care about USC's offense last year, because the defense is still a Lincoln Riley defense. But, you know, that's that. The reason I trust the spring game with Arch, or have some trust in Miller Moss and Lincoln Riley, quite frankly, is I trust my eyes. I've been watching a lot of quarterback play. You know, I mean, I'm eating it for breakfast, and the way that dude moved and the way he snapped his head around to go through his progressions and then unleash this really beautiful bomb downfield over and over again. So much so that, I mean, I was paying attention to this. I think Quinn Ewers might have had a reaction to this, taking down some Texas stuff on his IG, even though we got Sark going, "I know what I got in Quinn. I wanted to see what I have in Arch." He's got an Arch. Is a dude. Like, I loved watching him move around back there. I really did. I thought he had control. I thought that, okay, this is the number one prospect in the 2023 class, as opposed to another dude last name Manny. But right, to the point about LSU, he grew up a Texas fan. I'm still trying to get to that part, right? Like, Ole Miss, maybe. I get it. Tennessee, I get. You see Colt McCoy beat Bama and you decide you want to go to Texas and you live in New Orleans and your last name is Manning and LSU was around the way. I don't expect you to have an answer for that. I just need to lay out those facts and understand that, yeah, Arch Manning is probably going to terrorize both of us, as I am a new member of the SEC and not that enthusiastic about it. Are you at all interested in what that dude's going to do, say, when Quinn Ewers gets hurt? Because college football fan, Quinn Ewers gets hurt. That's going to happen. He gets hurt.
My thing, and again, I'm still trying to navigate the current landscape of college football. And maybe I shouldn't bother because it's about to change again with the, you know, with the format getting bigger.
Right.
But like, we spend so much time worrying about the future. And it never really pans out the way that we think it's going to. Like, Who's the kid? And I apologize for not knowing this off the top of my head. Who's the kid that stepped in and balled for Texas in the bowl game a few years ago?
Malik Murphy.
What? Okay, Malik Murphy. But I believe it was Casey Thompson, right?
You're talking about a couple years ago.
Yeah, several years ago.
Yes. Casey Thompson stepped in.
Son of the OU player.
Right.
Steps in and like it's the same conversation where it's like, oh my God, did you see what this kid did in the bowl game? And come to find out, it doesn't always translate that way. I mean, we're talking about USC. I know this was pre-Lincoln Riley, but I was joking about this with somebody the other day where you go through the list of like USC guys who were going to be the next great thing at USC, like from Keaton Slovis to, I mean, Jackson Dart used to be a USC quarterback. And I promise I don't say any of that to hate, but my point is we're all projecting like 2 years ahead of time. And in the meantime, especially with the transfer portal being what it is, most of this stuff's not going to come to fruition. It's just not. And now in the case of Arch Manning, I'm interested to see what happens here. Cause yeah, unfortunately for Texas, that is just such a big name that you can't ignore it. You know, where a lot of times the backup is like, whatever, like may the best man win and we'll probably have a guy transfer out. And that's just the nature of these things. But when it's somebody named Manning, it takes on a different level of notoriety. I mean, we are talking about the backup quarterback's performance in the spring game right now because his name is Arch Manning. Go ahead. I don't have a great answer to it. I really don't.
I see where you're coming from in as far as trying to predict what's going to happen or even get excited for what might happen and what's probably not going to occur. However, you know that the only thing that we like better than the starting quarterback is the five-star behind him. Mm-hmm. We always think that is the guy. And Trevor Lawrence really broke this. Like I don't think we would ever be able to come back from this because before Trevor Lawrence led Clemson to a national championship, who ain't nobody, people had to find out that Clemson was in fact in Clemson, South Carolina before Trevor Lawrence, right? We didn't have to deal with this. It was Jamel Holloway, 1985, Oklahoma, wishbone, look it up. All I'm saying is now we expect these guys to play right away and they expect to play right away. I don't think Arch does. I think that dude's just moving different. I think he's stuck in the 1990s because he wants to be. I think his family wants him to be. I think he's going to be at Texas until such a time as it becomes untenable for him to be there. But I do tend to get excited about these things because I'm going to play it as it lies, right? If it moves, it moves. If it shifts, it shifts. I'm okay, right? 12 teams this year. Maybe in a couple of years, we'll get to 14. We'll see what that means for the bowl schedule. We'll see what that means for name, image, and likeness. We'll see what that means for Austin versus the NCAA. A lot of changes coming our way. I'm not over-enthusiastic about it, but I will accept it when it happens. However, we're coming into this space where we're talking about guys having played for 5-6 years being first-round quarterbacks. We're coming into the space where guys are getting to be 22, 23, 24, even 25 years old, winning national championships, expect to play in the NFL. I think that's going to trickle down, right? So if we see player movement the way we see player movement, and we know the guys are going to chase bags, I'm curious, does that benefit a place like LSU or Texas, who I think of as blue bloods? Other people have their opinions about that. Or over there in Boulder, Colorado, where there seems to be quite the comings and goings, and we care about the comings and goings, do you think that we're going to see a space where we see one of these Central Floridas or SMU in the 1980s, a smaller school that really just wants to be good in a hurry, go get guys like an Arch Manning, go get guys that otherwise would be playing at Oklahoma, LSU, Alabama?
I mean, the answer is yes, obviously. Like in this day and age, it's easier than it ever has been for the NFL to find you. Like they will find you and they will scout you and you will get drafted no matter what. So the answer is yes, in the sense that, yeah, like if you can't crack the two deep at Texas or OU or LSU or Bama. Yeah. Like I really, and it's not just because Nick Saban retired, but I think we're getting to the end of the age where the fourth guy on the depth chart was a five-star. You know, I just don't think anybody's going to be willing to wait that long, but I do still think there's levels to this. And with all due respect to what's going on, you know, Dion and what's going on at Colorado, with all due respect to all of those programs, I don't think somebody like Arch Manning is going anywhere that doesn't have a proven track record of getting me to the top of the draft. You know, like if I have that kind of pedigree, if I think that highly of myself as a quarterback, I'm going to be in a program that is producing high level NFL players, preferably producing high level NFL quarterbacks, which it's an impressive coup for me that Texas got Arch, because they haven't really had that in recent history. And I think it's a testament to Sark that he was able to pull that off without the track record. But yeah, I think if Arch Manning's future doesn't lie at Texas, and I'm with you, I think it does. I think if Arch and his family had any doubt about what was going on there, he'd be gone already. Do you agree?
I do agree. I also think you make a very good point about there being levels to this. Thinking about Ohio State, and they went on a spending spree, and I have never been more excited to see a football team in college.
I've never
been more excited. It's ridiculous. And then on top of that, I have a Marvin Harrison Sr. that seems to be antithetical to Marvin Harrison Jr. It's my last one for you, but I saw this and I needed to throw it at you because we're going into the NFL draft. Before the NFL draft, Marvin Harrison Sr., Marvin Harrison Jr. do a feature for which Marvin Harrison Sr. says, "I wish that my son would go into meetings and say, throw me the effing ball." Because that's what I had to do. I had to walk in and say, I had 5 catches for 77 yards. By the way, you got the ball. Just saying it. You need to throw me the ball more. And when Marvin Harrison Jr. was like, "I don't really want to do that." And I'm like, "Dog, you got twice as many traits as your daddy. And we all love you. Yes, walk in there and demand the ball." How do you think that's going over? And am I right to be excited about him perhaps walking in there going, "Yes, I'm Keyshawn. I'm your number one. Give me the rock."
I wonder if Marv, and it doesn't seem like it suits his personality, but I wonder if last year was any kind of a learning experience or a growing pain. Cause like he gets to college and yeah, Ohio State's been pumping out these quarterbacks for years and you just never really had to worry again. Like to take, you know, I got to make everything about myself. Like imagine being an LSU receiver before Joe Burrow and being like, "Hey man, I'm trying to make it to the league. Like, can we get a quarterback in here who's going to get me the ball?" I wonder how frustrating that was for Marvin Harrison Jr. to wind up in a situation last year where he didn't always trust that he was going to get the ball as much as he probably thought he should have. Having said that, I don't think he needs to. And really, ultimately, Marvin Harrison Jr. can play this however he wants, and he's going to be fine. And we have evidence of that because I honestly don't think we're talking enough about the fact that Marvin Harrison Jr. told the entire draft process to shove it. And he's still going to be a top five pick. He straight up, he was like, "Look, I'm not doing the combine. I'm not doing pro day. I'll meet with you privately, but that's about it." And last time I heard, like, he only went on a couple of visits. Like, he visited with two or three teams. It's not like, you know, a lot of these prospects, you spend the entire month of March and some of April just zigzagging the country, visiting 10, 11, 12, 15 NFL facilities. Marv was like, "Nuts to all that, dude. I'm the best receiver in the draft, and everybody knows it, and it's going to be fine." And sure enough, we're about to do the draft. And if he quote unquote falls, it's going to be to like fifth overall. So I think Marvin Harrison Jr. could do whatever he wants. He could demand the ball. He could not say anything. Like I said, he didn't do anything this entire draft process. And I don't think it really changed anybody's opinion of how good he is.
I honestly don't think he wanted to leave Ohio State. I honestly think that, like, he's been around that program since declaring. He's been at a lot of their events. You mentioned that he has said, "No, I don't need to go into the NFL draft process," which is fair because you know everything you need to know about him. And, you know, I think one of the reasons Kyle McCord had to transfer is because the only guy that he felt comfortable throwing the ball to was Marvin Harrison Jr. last year.
Like, yeah,
we got a Mega Buka over here, dog. You got to spread the wealth a little bit, right? We got Cade Stover. You know, we got dudes out here. But I think that's a really interesting point to raise, that we've also reached a point where we don't care anymore. I mean, we do, but we don't. We don't care that Marvin Harrison Jr. is not kissing the ring and going all around to go through the NFL draft process. I saw this with Kyler Murray, who was still flirting with playing Major League Baseball, right? He didn't really want to go through of anything. And he let a guy run his pre-draft lead up that I didn't always think was doing him a great service, still went number one overall because it doesn't matter. Dave, I have kept you here entirely too long, though, but I'm still going to ask.
Oh no, bro, we can go. We don't have a time limit here. Whatever you need, man.
Well, I do want to be kind to the people that are listening. However, I'm going to make it about me for just 1 second. Micah Parsons fell in my lap. I love Mike. Play Micah in chess, right? Didn't know he was going to be a Dallas Cowboy. Certainly didn't know he was going to be that guy. Who got what guy? That guy. However, who am I supposed to get excited about? Dave, help me. I'm trying. Like, I ain't won no NFC championships since 2002. I ain't won no Super Bowl in 21st century.
We're talking about the Cowboys here. We're talking about the Cowboys.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Just making sure.
Oh, okay,
making
my sure. fault. My fault. Yes. What am I got Dak not really saying much. I got Jerry scribbling on the board, not really going out there making no moves. I got a Mike McCarthy who's digging his heels in. Help me. Make me feel some kind of way about this draft, please.
I can't do that, RJ. The Cowboys have really committed like no other year I can remember to just an offseason of inactivity. I mean, they're heading into this draft with no fewer than five major needs, and they only have three big time picks in the, you know, the first three rounds to do anything about it with. I will say, if you're absolutely looking for optimism, it's that they need an offensive lineman, and the track record shows that they're very good at drafting those. You take it all the way back to Tyron Smith. Travis Frederick was an all-pro. Zach
Martin.
Yeah, we sent
them Tyler Smith from right down the street.
Tyler Smith is an all-pro as well. Like, throughout, for about 15 years now, if the Cowboys spend a big-time pick on an offensive lineman, he's more than likely going to be good. So you got that going for you, and now they just got to figure out how to fill all the other spots. I mean, maybe, you know, throw them a Jalen Wright out of Tennessee at running back, maybe. You know, you go get what they need, a linebacker. I really love Edgerrin Cooper out of Texas A&M. Maybe he falls to you, you know, in the second round. That seems not super likely, but you never know. So basically, if the Cowboys hit a home run with all three of their first picks, they might be okay. That's my version of optimism.
It's asking too much. It's frankly
They are asking far too much of their scouting department and of the guys that are already on their roster. But what are you going to do?
Continue to root for the Cowboys. Look. My thanks to Dave Hellman, who hosts the NFL on Fox podcast and is a mensch and didn't lose to Jordan Love in the playoffs.
That wasn't me. I didn't do that. That wasn't me.
That is going to do it for this episode of the number one college football show. A number one college football show leads of screening are Jack Coakley and Torrin Westfall. They make us better in the film room. Additional support from Kiara Santana and Jim Cunningham. Put the special in our special teams. Producer Javion Duncan makes sure the recruits and the rivals see the cake we bake. Technical director Gabe Sable sends in the signals. Senior producer Catherine Cordaggi sees the entire field from the booth. Lead producer Tyler Wojak calls the plays from the sideline to play snaps on my clap. We're back on Thursday for our UFL show featuring our week 5 UFL power rankings, MVP rankings. Once again, my huge thanks to Dave Hellman for joining us as we get prepared for the NFL draft. That's going to do it for me. I'll see you guys on Thursday. Until then, stay low, keep those feet driving. Deuces.